Hello and welcome to episode 167 of the MCU Fan Show, bringing you Marvel Studios news and commentary. My name is Sean Gerber. I will be joined in just a bit by Paul Herman. This week, I am first going to update you on the current status of all of the MCU projects we expect to see in Phase 4. And then Paul and I are going to talk specifically about the latest delays to Spider-Man 3, as well as the Falcon and Winter Soldier. And we're also going to follow up on my Fantastic Four fan casting from the last episode of the podcast and maybe offer a few more suggestions for various roles associated with the Fantastic Four. But let's first go around the MCU slate and just look at where things stand for all of the Marvel Studios movies and series that have officially been announced. I'm going to start with movies and then I'll cover series. So with Black Widow, it is still, as of this recording, scheduled for release on November 6th. At least that's the domestic release date. I know it has different international release dates. I believe it's October 28th in the UK. The problem, though, is that we still don't have a definitive timetable for theaters reopening here in the US. So another delay is possible, and Premium Video on Demand and Disney Plus or some combination of those are also possibilities for Black Widow. So maybe there's a delay, maybe it goes digital. It's too hard to tell right now, and there's another strategy that could be employed here as far as getting Black Widow in theaters, but maybe not necessarily in the US, because theaters are starting to open up in a lot more international markets, including China, which as of this recording, just started opening up within the past week or so. And depending on how things go, depending on how movies are performing internationally, then what remains a possibility, what's being speculated about right now, is the idea that maybe studios will open some films abroad, even if they don't know when they can release films in the US. It's not unusual. It's happened several times in the history of the MCU for movies to come out internationally ahead of their domestic release date, but usually it's only by a couple of weeks. We haven't had a scenario where an MCU movie has been released abroad and there was still no idea on Disney's part or the part of any studio that was distributing a Marvel Studios film where they were releasing the film abroad but had no idea when they would release it in the US. So if that happens, it would be something brand new. And we may get a clue as to how likely it is for something like that to happen, depending on what Disney does with Mulan. They recently pulled it from their release calendar. It doesn't have a release date as of right now, but there is some thought that maybe the film will debut internationally before it's available in the US. And I suppose if they do something like that, maybe the films play exclusively in theaters internationally, but maybe in markets where Premium Video on Demand and or Disney Plus or some combination of those is available and it's financially viable for studios, for Disney, maybe they'll do a combined release strategy or something like that. It's really worth watching what happens with Mulan in the weeks to come, because if Disney does come up with a new distribution strategy for that film, if it works, then they could employ it on future releases, including Black Widow. But it's still too early to tell on all of that, so all we can go on right now is that Black Widow is still currently scheduled for release in theaters on November 6th. So the next movie on the slate is The Eternals, still scheduled for release on February 12th, 2021. Marvel and director Chloe Zhao finished production. They wrapped principal photography on The Eternals before everything was shut down due to the pandemic. What remains for the film, besides the visual effects and editing the film for post-production, what remains would be the reshoots and additional photography that are standard for every single Marvel Studios production. And it looks like maybe that's happening sometime soon, because last month, Salma Hayek, who plays Ajak in the film, posted on her Instagram that she was dyeing her hair for reshoots. Now, she didn't specify that it was for Eternals, and it could have been for another production that she was a part of, but it looks like things are pretty much on schedule for the Eternals, and they should be able to finish on time. The only reason the Eternals would move is if it's part of a domino effect, because Black Widow slides back from its November 6th release date. But for now, The Eternals remains on schedule for its February 12th, 2021 release date. Next on the schedule for movies is Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings, scheduled for release on May 7th of 2021. Deadline reported earlier this month that production was expected to resume in Australia by the end of the month, by the end of July 2020. And it looks like that's happening. Director Justin Daniel Cretton, based on his Instagram, is in Sydney, Australia, where they were filming the movie before everything was shut down. Simu Liu, who stars as Shang-Chi, posted an Instagram story from what looked like the inside of his trailer. So it looks like they're back on set. I don't know if cameras are rolling or not just yet, but cameras are either rolling again or they're about to be on Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. So if they are able to finish making the movie, as long as there's not another shutdown, they should be able to finish principal photography and post-production on the film and have it ready for May 7th, 2021. And again, like Eternals, the only reason I see Shang-Chi sliding back, well, Shang-Chi, because they haven't finished principal photography, if there's another shutdown, that would obviously cause a delay. Outside of that, though, it looks like they should be able to finish on time. So unless there's a larger domino effect of things sliding back as a result of Black Widow moving off of its November 6th release date, we should be able to see Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings next May. The next movie after that is Spider-Man 3. This movie just moved from November 5th of 2021 to December 17th of 2021. Paul and I are going to talk about this in just a bit, but Sony grabbed this release date for Spider-Man 3 after Disney moved off of that release date. Avatar 2 was scheduled for release on December 17, 2021. Disney pushed Avatar and all of its Star Wars films back a year, and so December 17th opened up. Sony went ahead and took what is probably going to be a more lucrative date than November 5th would have been, and we have heard that production is going to start this fall, and Tom Holland recently said that he expects to wrap production on the film next February, which leaves them plenty of time to finish post-production for a December 17th, 2021 release. They would have been done in time for November 5th, but December 17th, clearly a more valuable release date in the eyes of Sony Pictures. So we'll see Spider-Man 3 right in the middle of the holiday season of 2021, as long as there's not a bigger domino effect across the entire MCU. Less than 2 months after Spider-Man 3's current release date, Thor: Love and Thunder is scheduled to arrive in theaters February 11th of 2022. Natalie Portman recently said that production would start in Australia at the beginning of next year, which makes sense because Marvel typically has production start about a year or so before a movie is due in theaters. So Thor: Love and Thunder should be ready in plenty of time for a February 11th, 2022 release date. And it will be followed by Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, scheduled for release on March 25th of 2022. Followed by Black Panther, still scheduled for release on May 6th of 2022, followed by Captain Marvel 2, still scheduled for release on July 8th of 2022. So all of those remain on schedule. We're just awaiting production updates. And for Black Panther 2 and Captain Marvel 2, we still don't know a lot about those movies. We don't even know the official final titles for those films. So maybe those are updates that we'll get sometime soon. But I don't anticipate any major delays for these films unless, again, there's some huge domino effect that goes across the MCU. But with these ones being further away on the calendar, it probably makes it a little less likely that they're going to be subject to delays, but it really just depends on how things go from here. And maybe Marvel will decide that they want to stretch out that slate a little bit more because there is so much time, or there's so many Marvel movies now. When you look at Spider-Man 3, December 17th of 2021, followed by Thor: Love and Thunder in February, Doctor Strange in March, Black Panther in May, Captain Marvel in July. But then again, with audiences having so little Marvel in 2020, maybe they'll be ready for extra Marvel in 2022. Probably not going to be much of an issue. So that's where things stand with the movies. And even if there is going to be some sort of delay to Black Widow, that doesn't necessarily have to impact the entire slate, because if you look at where the movies are right now, there's a big cushion between Shang-Chi's current release date, May 7th of 2021, and the next Marvel film after that, Spider-Man 3, December 17th of that year. So you have 7 months there that if things need to slide a little bit, maybe the next slide only impacts, if there is one, maybe it only impacts Black Widow, The Eternals, and Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings, with the rest of the slate being left alone. Moving on to the Marvel Studios series, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier was scheduled to arrive on Disney Plus next month in August of 2020. We now know that's not going to happen. It didn't look like that was going to happen. Disney has released the schedule of what's new on Disney Plus for the month of August. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is not on that schedule because they haven't finished making the show. So The Hollywood Reporter has reported that production is expected to resume in Atlanta early next month, so early on in August. But The Hollywood Reporter has also said that a 9-day shoot for The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is scheduled for the Czech Republic this fall. Hopefully that means September, so it won't be too long until they finish the series. And if all of that holds, then we could still see The Falcon and Winter Soldier sometime this year, if not early 2021. And we might get an update on The Falcon and Winter Soldier when Disney has a quarterly earnings call with investors on August 4th. Paul and I are going to talk a little bit more about that in just a few minutes. So moving over to WandaVision, it is still, as of this recording, scheduled to premiere on Disney Plus in December 2020. As far as production goes, we know that they were mostly done with the series, and it looks like production will resume very, very soon if it hasn't already. According to the Tampa Bay Comic Convention last month, Paul Bettany canceled his appearance at their show due to WandaVision filming in Los Angeles in July. Subsequently, the entire convention was obviously canceled, but Paul Bettany was scheduled to appear at the convention and had to back out because of filming for WandaVision in LA this month. So if this holds, if they get back to shooting WandaVision this month, then they should be able to finish the series in time for a premiere on Disney Plus in December 2020. They should be able to do that. The other considerations here, though, is that if the show is mostly done and they're going to be able to finish it or finish shooting it sometime soon, and presumably they would have gone ahead and been doing all the post-production on everything they'd already shot. So working in this new material that they have to go and shoot, maybe they could have it done in time for December 2020. They should be able to at least do that, but maybe they could have it done a little bit earlier. I think there are other considerations here, because is there anything else that we need to see or that we're supposed to see as an audience before we see WandaVision? For example, do we need to see the Falcon Winter Soldier or Black Widow before we see WandaVision? If the order doesn't matter, then maybe WandaVision could swap places with the Falcon Winter Soldier. I don't think it would be ready quickly enough for WandaVision to take Falcon Winter Soldier's spot in August of 2020, but maybe it could move up just a bit. I don't know if it could move up all the way into September either, but maybe October or November, or perhaps that's less likely, because if it can't be in August or September, Disney's got The Mandalorian Season 2 dropping in October with new episodes each week through November, or maybe even into December, presumably. So perhaps Disney won't need to do that, but it could potentially be an option if Disney really wants to beef up Disney Plus, if the production and post-production schedule for WandaVision can accommodate that, and if the delay to the Falcon Winter Soldier is going to be very significant by several months, then maybe WandaVision arrives on Disney Plus first. And it still might arrive on Disney Plus first, even if it just sticks with its current premiere date of December of this year. If the Falcon Winter Soldier is not going to be ready by then, perhaps they just move forward with WandaVision and worry about the Falcon Winter Soldier whenever they have that series ready. So after WandaVision, we have Loki, and we never had a specific premiere month for Loki. All we were ever told was spring 2021. Per The Hollywood Reporter, production will resume on that series in Atlanta as early as next month, which should mean that they should be able to finish making the show and premiere it on Disney Plus in the spring of next year as currently scheduled. The What If animated series from Marvel Studios remains on track for its summer 2021 premiere on Disney Plus. It's animated, so the impact of all these delays and shutdowns should be fairly minimal on the show. I don't really know that there's going to be any significant delay, and I don't expect any significant delay on What If. After What If, we have Hawkeye. Directors have been hired for blocks of episodes, Bert and Bertie, otherwise known as Amber Finlayson and Katie Elwood, respectively. They recently directed Troop Zero, which is a really great movie on Amazon, so I encourage you to check that out. They've been hired to direct a block of episodes for Hawkeye. Reese Thomas, who did Comrade Detective and also directed John Mulaney and the Sack Lunch Bunch for Netflix. Comrade Detective was for Amazon. But Thomas has also been hired to direct a block of episodes for Hawkeye. And this is the first live-action Marvel Studios series on Disney Plus that has different directors for different episodes, kind of like what we've seen on The Mandalorian. The Mandalorian has used different directors, but the Marvel Studios series up until this point, with The Falcon Winter Soldier, WandaVision, and Loki, each of those series has employed a single director for all of its episodes. So this is a little bit different for Marvel in the way that they've done these series. But I do like these director choices, especially Bert and Bertie. Having seen what they did with Troop Zero, I'm really excited to see what they bring to the table with Kate Bishop being a part of this Hawkeye series. So the other announced but not dated Marvel Studios Disney Plus series are Ms. Marvel, She-Hulk, and Moon Knight. We do know that the writers' rooms have wrapped for at least the latter two, She-Hulk and Moon Knight, so they've gone ahead and they've done the creative development work, and it's just a matter of being able to go and film the series for She-Hulk and Moon Knight. Ms. Marvel is probably on the same track, and there have been rumors going around that perhaps production will start on that series later on this year, perhaps as soon as November. But all of those series, because we never really had release dates to begin with, so the assumption or the speculation has been that we would see those series maybe, or at least one of them, starting in late 2021, and then maybe the others following in 2022. And all of that sounds possible for those series, and we're probably not going to get specific release dates on them anytime soon. At least I would be surprised if we do, as they're all still relatively far out compared to the rest of the slate. So that's where things stand right now across the MCU slate, on the big screen, or so we hope, and on Disney+. Bringing in Paul Herman now to go ahead and talk about the Falcon and Winter Soldier delay, as well as another slight delay for Spider-Man 3. But first, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm reading lots of comics and trying to stay busy. Things are starting to look up a little bit in the old Paul Herman household. So, yeah, it's a new beginnings, if you will. So, but yeah, reading lots of comics, and I'm anticipating this pandemic to be eventually over and life to get somewhat on a new track, somebody back to normal, whatever that means. I don't know.
Let's go ahead and let's start talking about the Spider-Man news, because I know everyone knows who listens to the show, Paul, that that's your favorite. Yep. So with Spider-Man 3 being pushed from November 5th of next year to December 17th to take advantage of the date that's now open, because Avatar 2 and all the Star Wars movies, everything got pushed by a year by Disney. So with Spider-Man, I mean, it's not that much. It's just several weeks as far as the delay goes. So I don't know if that's going to be as big of an issue for you. So I think I'd rather start with the question, though, of how you feel about the idea of seeing a Spider-Man movie besides Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse, because technically it's already happened, but to see a live-action Spider-Man movie in December, right in the middle of the holiday season.
Well, with Star Wars, it's actually nice for Christmas present stuff, because there's so much tie-in material that I wanted. Now, admittedly, I don't buy as much Marvel collectible stuff as I do Star Wars. And that's just been kind of like, we've talked about before the show, Sean, about, you know, what we collect and whatnot. And I still buy Marvel stuff, but for whatever reason, Star Wars is usually what I usually
helps to pick a lane. I get it.
Yeah, no, it does. And because when I was a kid, there was more Star Wars stuff to get. And I think that's why I kind of tend to go more collecting Star Wars stuff than as much as Marvel or whatever. But I still buy Marvel and whatever. But as far as Christmas time, I always kind of hesitated with that release date initially with Star Wars. And then now with Spider-Man, in retrospect, with now Star Wars coming out all these different years on Christmas, I actually love it. And it's a lot of fun, and it makes the holiday season for me just kind of think about, this is coming out, because obviously Marvel is going to probably want to put out a ton of Spider-Man centric stuff, whether it be products or maybe comic book omnibuses or what have you. They're going to be out during Christmas time. And so what better way for me to beg my wife for me to get what I want if it's not for Christmas? So I really have embraced the idea of an IP franchise thing coming out that I love around Christmas time. So I kind of love the fact that Christmas has become the new summer blockbuster. And I think that's really cool. And I think the more we can spread these awesome franchise films, IPs out, the better. And I think that Christmas time and before Christmas time, it only really matters anymore when they come out. I mean, obviously, Black Panther showed that a movie can come out in February, or Deadpool and Black Panther for that matter have shown they can come out in February and be huge. So yeah, I think Christmas time, it's almost like the new summer blockbuster, where it's like, hey, everyone's out of school, go see this movie for the next, 2 weeks, whatever. And it fits perfectly. So for me, I don't see these movies with my family. I see it with usually sometimes my older brother, but usually I see him by myself a lot, which hopefully that will change now that Chris Cloud's moving back to Washington in a few months. So that'll be probably change, and I'll see it with Chris mainly. But besides that, yeah, I'm excited. Like you said, it's not much of a delay. So it's to me, I almost think it actually does it a more of a service for the movie, because it's going to be at Christmas time, and it's going to have probably a lot more tie-in material now tied to it because of that reason alone. So I'm totally down with that move.
I mean, it does make me kind of hope that Christmas is factored into Spider-Man 3, I don't think, to be perfectly clear, they should not rewrite the movie based on this new release date. I don't think they should do that. But, I mean, there are some parallels between the Spider-Man franchise and the Iron Man franchise, which maybe some don't like, but whatever. So if you look at those parallels, well, Iron Man 3 was also set during Christmas, so it wouldn't be totally outside the norm for Spider-Man 3 to be set during Christmas. I don't really know what they're going to do with that. And as I said, I don't think they should rewrite it just for the sake of the release date. So, but if that becomes a happy coincidence that they have a Marvel movie, an MCU film that is set during the holiday season, and it also comes out during the holiday season, because November 5th, I mean, that's still holiday-ish, but it's not quite in the middle of it like December 17th is. So
yeah,
I think if that happy coincidence happened, it would be cool. But even independent of what actually happens in Spider-Man 3, just the idea of a Marvel movie, an MCU movie coming out right around Christmas time, I like that. I mean, I've enjoyed it with Star Wars over the past few years, and I think it would be fun to go see a new MCU film. And I was even wondering, as soon as Disney left Avatar 2, as soon as they took Avatar 2 off of December 17th of next year, I immediately started thinking about it and talked about it on the Daily Bugle on the Patreon, like if there would be a domino effect and a Marvel movie would end up on that date. And I was thinking more of Disney's releases since they left that release date, but Sony was like, we're taking it. And of course they did. And so I like the idea of Spider-Man 3 coming out then. I don't like the idea of waiting longer to see it. But at this point, when we've had delays of several months for Black Widow, and who knows when we're going to see that, as well as a delay to Falcon and Winter Soldier, which we're going to talk about for Disney Plus. I mean, we've had so many delays at this point that one more delay by a handful of weeks doesn't really seem like that big of a deal. And I do agree with Sony's logic here. I don't think that this delay has anything to do with production timelines or not being able to finish the film in time for a November 5th release date next year. I don't think it has anything to do with that. It just has to do with a better, potentially more lucrative release date becoming available on the calendar, so they just took it. And December 17th is probably going to be a more valuable release date than November 5th would have been. November 5th would have been just fine. Marvel's been making money in the first weekend in November. They did that with Thor: The Dark World, with Doctor Strange, and then made even more money with Thor: Ragnarok in 2017. So they've been able to do that. But that weekend, right, or any weekend right around or right before Christmas, tends to do very, very well, because, and Sony's done very, very well in December with the Jumanji series over the past couple of years. And so I think they're looking at not just what Disney's done with Star Wars, but what they themselves have experienced as a studio with high profile, big budget blockbuster releases in that period of time during the year. And they know that there's usually not as much competition once you get to the last weekend in December and through January. So you really have an opportunity to stretch your legs at the box office. And so that's where I think they feel like Spider-Man 3 can do very well. And as far as the box office goes, I mean, I wouldn't dare make any box office predictions now, because who knows what the box office looks like in the wake of all of this. But because before, I would have said Spider-Man 3 guaranteed to make $1 billion, just like Spider-Man Far From Home did. But I don't know that anything is guaranteed to make $1 billion anymore. So I will go ahead and remove that expectation for now until we see movies making $1 billion post pandemic. So until we see that, I would just say that every studio is challenged with having a release strategy that allows them to get the biggest possible return on their investment. And I do think that the potential return on investment is probably greater on December 17th of next year than it is on November 5th. And so it's worth it for Sony to hold on to the film for a little while longer. And as we said, not that big of a deal for us as far as delays go. And we'll be happy to see the film just as soon as we can, hopefully next December. Hopefully the current schedule holds and we'll see it then.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. That one stings a little more because, yes. I mean, once we started seeing delays to the movie slate, like Black Widow leaving May 1st and now being set for November 6th, and who knows if that's going to hold, based on the way things are going right now with theaters and so many studios just taking movies out of 2020 altogether. So we'll see what happens with Black Widow. But the reprieve from that was The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We were going to get, and now it's looked like The Falcon and Winter Soldier was going to be delayed for a while. It's not like it's some shock that The Falcon and the Winter Soldier has been delayed. But it is still a disappointment because it felt like that was the one thing that maybe, even if movies were going to keep getting delayed, that we would have the Disney Plus series. But the big issue, of course, is being able to finish making the show. And I do want them to take the time to finish making the show. I don't want it to be compromised just to have something out there on Disney Plus. So I respect the reasoning behind it and agree that it's all 100% necessary, that the show deserves to be all that it can possibly be and have the time that it needs in order for them to finish making the show and to do that in and to do that safely for everybody who's going to be involved in making it and be on set. So all of that stuff is of paramount importance. And so I don't disagree with any of that. It's just the disappointment. I can understand and accept all the reasons behind it. And I can understand and agree that it's all necessary based on the current circumstances, but also just as a fan who was looking forward to that show and just looking forward to another new chapter of the MCU, yeah, I can't help but be at least a little bit disappointed.
That one hurts, I think, the most, because I was really anticipating that still coming out, even with the pandemic. You know, back when this all thing happened back in March and things started halting, I really thought that things would get back on track enough, or they had filmed enough to they could put out at least some of that show. And right now they want to release it, obviously, on a, you know, week to week basis and have it be out every week or whatever. And that is just such a disappointment for me, because I love the Falcon and Winter Soldier, as you guys will probably hear on the podcast in old shows. I really, really, really liked the concept and the ideas of Baron Zemo being in it. The other, you know, things that they're going to put into the ideas of maybe the Thunderbolts and things like that. I was really excited about all that because I love Falcon and Winter Soldier and those characters. And so the fact that they had kind of halted everything for that show, it just really, really bummed me out. And yeah, I you know, for me, I know they haven't announced when it's coming back, and I know things are slowly getting back into production a little bit in different parts of the world, and obviously not in California, Sean.
But, no, it's happening here. Production is happening here. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I don't know about the big, big stuff, but there are people working. There are cameras rolling in LA.
Oh, my bad. Well, so anyway, either way, it's kind of everything's been, you know, coming back slowly, and I really thought this would be because it was already, you know, a good portion through, and the fact that Disney is really trying to get as much content in as possible, I thought they'd figure out a way to get that, you know, taken care of. And the fact that it's not is just a huge bummer. And you know, Sean, we're talking about these delays. I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing either. It's bad in a sense where I'm like, I want to watch these now, but I don't know if it's bad for the interest of Marvel necessarily after Endgame. It almost is. I almost think that this delay is only going to help everything in the long run, because people are now going to be itching for it. You know, we haven't had Marvel in a while, and Black Widow and Winter Soldier and Scarlet Witch. It's been a while since we've seen these characters, but we know that the stuff is coming, and it's just, you got to wonder if this will maybe help Marvel generate a little, where some people, even myself, to that point when I was like, okay, I'm, you know, there's been so much Marvel coming out that I'm not needed a break, but I needed something to kind of a palate cleanser of some sort. Right. And either that or a break is what I needed. And Black Widow would have been a great palate cleanser because it's kind of a prequel or whatever, but Black Widow is turning into kind of both palate cleanser, and it's going to be, you know, coming back a huge hiatus. And the fact that we haven't got this, I'm welcoming as much Marvel as I can, because it's been a while. Sorry, I had to say that. And for me, it's just, I'm ready for something, you know, because now I'm like, we haven't had it in forever. And I just got to wonder if this is going to now only help the mainstream audience is even more hungry for Marvel, because it's been a while and we've been sitting there. We haven't had new content on these things. And these streaming shows are, you know, like Disney Plus, and they managed to get the Mandalorian in. I know Mandalorian season two was right before Falcon Winter Soldier, but I really thought they were going to be able to, you know, push that out, because it's not as much special effects as in you know, whatever with that show than the Mandalorian season two. But yeah, I think it's only going to help Marvel and Disney, because right now, like you said, we don't know what the box office is going to be. We don't know what Black Widow is going to get back as being the first Marvel film back into a theater, assuming that it gets released in a theater still. I mean, I thought for a long time, Sean, that it was going to be released in a theater. And now, you know, I'm starting to think, I'm not saying it's not going to, but I can't say it won't not be. So you got to wonder is when is it going to be, if it's going to help and what it all means. But yeah, I just kind of think that even though it sucks that we're not getting it, I think when it does hit, it's going to be even more impactful and more buzzworthy when it comes out because of all the delays and all the anticipation because of the pandemic. So I just got to wonder, will it help these things? I don't know.
I do think it will heighten the anticipation. I mean, I think anticipation isn't really a problem historically for the MCU, particularly within the last few years, but I think people already kind of knew, and people were already feeling it like going into Black Widow, because that was our longest break from Spider-Man Far From Home to Black Widow was our longest break between new chapters of the MCU since Avengers to Iron Man 3, which was about a year from May of 2012 to May, a day less than a year from May of 2012 to May of 2013. Now this is our longest delay since The Incredible Hulk to Iron Man 2 from June of 2008 to May of 2010. And we may end up with our longest delay between MCU chapters ever. I don't really know when we're going to see this stuff, although I feel like WandaVision is still going to be on track for December of this year. So I feel like at the latest, that's when we're going to see something from the MCU. But with the Falcon and Winter Soldier, I do think it just increases the anticipation. Same thing for Black Widow. And with the Falcon and Winter Soldier, it's different than Black Widow, because Black Widow is also, so far right now, still intended to be a theatrical release, and we don't know what that means for movies going forward in the wake of all of this. But on Disney Plus for The Falcon and Winter Soldier, I think people are still going to be very, very excited to see it, and people are going to be happy to consume it. As long as it's good, then the show is going to be just as big of a hit as it always would have been, if not bigger. And I like that they are, even though I don't like having to wait longer to see it as a fan, I do like that they're holding on to, at least from what we can tell, they're holding on to what they intended to film, because they have, apparently they're going to be doing some shooting in Atlanta next month, and then they're going to be moving on, according to The Hollywood Reporter, for about 9 days. They'll be shooting in the Czech Republic, which is where they were when everything was shut down. And I like that they're going back to where they were when they were shut down, because that tells you that they didn't just rewrite the show. They didn't just rewrite it to say, well, we're not going to go to the Czech Republic anymore. Let's totally change everything that we were doing here. Let's just eliminate all of those scenes from the series and rework everything else. I like that they're not doing that. I like that they are continuing on with the plan, although it's also worth noting that this was already the second plan. They weren't going to the Czech Republic. They were going to be filming in Puerto Rico, and then because of the earthquakes there in January, they had to reshuffle things and reorganize the show so they could go ahead and finish it in the Czech Republic. And I think that's part of the reason why The Falcon and the Winter Soldier didn't finish before everything was shut down, is they were already having to account for some changes in the schedule, some changes in the plan. But I don't want to have the plan continue to change as far as creatively what's happening in the show. It already had to change once, so I like the idea that they're sticking to what the new plan was, and they're just going to go and they're going to finish making the series. And even as long as they finish filming it, if it's not going to be in August, if they finish production on it by September, it may not be that long, because everything that they've already shot, they would be doing post-production on that. They would be working on that. They're not just going to let that sit there. So if they just have to finish the new material that they've filmed, depending on what episodes everything is from, and maybe some of this stuff is from early episodes and it's not all from later episodes in the season, but we could still get to a point where we end up seeing that there are we could still get to a point where it's possible that we still see the Falcon and the Winter Soldier this year. Maybe we still see it by, maybe not August, but maybe October or November. I don't really know. But of course, whenever we get to see it, I'll be just as excited as I ever was to see it, if not more. And I think, to your point, a lot of people are going to feel the same way and just hopefully going to get a sign soon. Disney does have an investor call on August 4th. So questions will come up about Disney Plus during that, and maybe we'll get an update on when we can expect to see The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because that's how we found out about it the first time. The way we found out about The Falcon and the Winter Soldier premiering in August and WandaVision in December That was also on a Disney quarterly investor call. So maybe that's when we'll get the next update on when we're actually going to see these shows, and specifically The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Now, moving on to a follow-up on last week's show. So in the last episode, I talked about MCU Fan Show and the name change, but I also talked about the Fantastic Four, and I gave my casting choices, my top choices, and my shortlist for the role of Marvel's first family. For Reed Richards, my top choice, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, but I also had on my shortlist Bill Hader, William Jackson Harper, and Lakeith Stanfield. For Sue Storm, my top choice was Issa Rae. Also on my shortlist, DeWanda Wise, Ruth Negga, and Evan Rachel Wood. For Johnny Storm, my top choice was Shameik Moore, but I also had on my list John Boyega, Marcus Scribner, and Joe Keery. For Ben Grimm, my top choice was Seth Rogen, followed by a shortlist including Nick Kroll, Jonah Hill, and Andy Samberg. I also threw out my top choice for Silver Surfer, Leslie Odom Jr., and then Keanu Reeves remains on my shortlist and would still be an amazing choice for the Silver Surfer. So we're going to talk about some other roles on this show. We'll talk about Doctor Doom. I've also got some choices I really like for Mole Man. But before we get to that, Paul, what are your thoughts on some of the names I threw out there for the Fantastic Four? And I know you've got your own choices as well. But yes, for the names that have been thrown out there, how do you feel?
I really like Yahya as Reed Richards. I think that's a very, very solid choice. I mean, that guy has been multiple DC characters, and I love the presence he has as Reed Richards. And when I get to my picks, I will say that's a key component to Reed Richards in any role, right? But I mean, for me, Reed Richards, you need to have him be, you have to have that commanding presence when he speaks, because when he speaks, he has to sound really smart and know what he's talking about. And you have to really believe everything he's saying, even though it's fake and it's not real. And not everyone can do that. Not every actor's strength is a command, you know, has a presence and a strength when they talk, and where you kind of just, you go along with them. Sometimes you're like, nah, I don't believe it. It just doesn't come out right. And that to me is so critical with Reed Richards. And I forgot the last guy's name is Ian Gufford. I can't forget the last guy.
Oh yeah. Ian Guffold or whatever. I can't remember.
Yeah. Forgot his name. And God bless him. He looked the part, but he just did not have, he was okay. He just did not have the presence that you needed to have Reed Richards have. And so with recast, and obviously with the, you know, Miles Teller, and even though I like that movie more than everyone else does,
Ian Gruffudd is the last name. So yeah. We both butchered it.
Yeah. I always butcher names. Everyone knows this, but Miles Teller didn't butcher that one. He's a great actor, but that movie, he's not the traditional Reed Richards, which again, it wasn't, I don't think that was the intention, and he was okay for that Reed Richards. But as far as if you're going to MCU version, he has to be. And one of the things I liked what you did, Sean, is that you casted someone who wasn't someone super young. And that's, to me, also key. And so I like the idea that most of these people are a little bit older, and you need to have that relationship kind of established with these characters. Sue Storm, I think I forgot her name. Is it Issa?
Issa Rae.
Issa Rae.
Yeah, everybody's in there. Well, except for Lakeith Stanfield, who's actually in his late 20s, but I don't know, his presence just reads older to me. Everybody else I cast, I think they're pretty much in, well, except for Johnny Storm. I picked actors who were in their 30s or maybe some of them in their early 40s. Like Bill Hader is in his 40s, but Yahya, I think, is only like 33, 34. He's actually not as old as I thought he was, but I think But that's just because of his presence as Dr. Mm-hmm. Manhattan. I guess a guy who exists outside of time or experiences time all at the same time is mm-hmm. reads Makes a little sense. Bit older.
Yeah.
But that's where, the key word to me is presence. And I think that Yahya has that commanding presence that it doesn't matter that he's 33, not that 33 or 34 is like super young or a baby or anything, but I do think that he can play, even if they want Reed to be a little bit older than Yahya actually is, I think he can age up just fine.
Yeah. And Issa Rae, I haven't seen much of her in. I do want to see her movie with Lovebirds.
With my Kumail.
Wife and I. Yeah, my wife and I want to see that. In fact, I might propose, well, That's a long story, but I might propose that movie to her a little bit later. As far as Johnny Storm, yeah, like I need to see Dope. I need to see that
movie.
Yeah,
you would like Dope.
Yeah, I need to see it. And I love him obviously as Miles. So, I mean, to me, that seems fine. That seems perfect. My only thing is, and we kind of talked a little bit, I think, on the somewhere, I think on our last podcast, the classic pre-show recording, I remember saying Seth Rogen is thing. I see it. I can't get behind it. I just can't. I just, not my thing. I'm a big Ben Grimm fan, and there hasn't been a very good thing on screen really for the most part. And it's hard for me to get behind Seth Rogen. They really need to nail this. And it's tough. It's a tough role. I have a couple options, I think, for me. But I think it's too jokey. Thing is funny, but he's more of the butt of the joke instead of delivering the jokes. And I just don't see Seth Rogen being the one that takes the jokes in and reacting to them without his wit or without having that wit and sounding weird.
I don't know. I mean, I think of the thing as being the guy who definitely has to take the jokes from Johnny Storm, which I think Seth Rogen could do, but the thing makes his share. I mean, especially if he's fighting the Hulk. So like, I feel like, you know, in terms of verbal sparring, like the thing can give almost as good as he gets. And so I like the idea of Seth Rogen. And I like that big deep voice that he has, like that coming out of the big orange rock guy, like makes sense to me. But I also just think Seth Rogen as an actor is underrated. I think not only is he funny, but when you get into kind of the sadness of Ben Grimm just being trapped in this body that he doesn't want to be in, I think Seth Rogen can get there, and I think he can capture that.
Yeah, I'll give you this. Thing might be, he quips a little bit more than usual, but he's not, the thing with Thing is he's not as clever. And that's the thing with Seth is that he's such a great writer. He's so clever with his humor and everything that it just would be a little too much. And yeah. I would trust him
to pull back though, because I think that might be what makes it more exciting for him, is like he can go against type and not necessarily be the smartest guy in the room or have the perfect comeback. Like to actually have a joke that's funny because it's not funny is like, it would be a different challenge for him in terms of humor. And so that's where I think it could actually end up working.
Yeah. You know, it's, now that I think about it, I can't believe I didn't think of this before. Have you seen Observe and Report?
Yes, I have.
I love Observe and Report, and he is a lot. He's not
exactly,
I'll give you credit. Yeah, you're right. Okay. You know, I could buy.
Where do you think I'm getting this multidimensional Seth Rogen from? Some of it's from Observe and Report.
If you haven't seen Observe and Report, people, that is a fantastic dark comedy. It's weird and I love it. It's so weird. Oh my God. I need to see that movie again. It's been a while. My wife and I, we saw it in the theater. We loved it. Yes. But to me, I think maybe it's because he's too big of a name also. But again, I think Observe and Report, and if he was cast and he was like really excited about it, you know, besides just collecting a paycheck, but he was actually passionate about playing the character, I could get behind it. If he's just a cash grab and he's just like, oh yeah.
No, I think he would. I mean, Seth Rogen's a pretty big dork. So like, I think true. He would get, admittedly, he's into this stuff. And I mean that in the best possible way. So, who do you think you're listening to right now? So, like, I think they would be really cool. And I think that, you know, and also, yeah, of this group that I've put in my top choices, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Issa Rae, Shameik Moore, Seth Rogen, of that group, Seth Rogen is the biggest star, and he's the most well-known name, but I also like that idea of taking the guy who's arguably the biggest star amongst this group and having him be mostly performance capture. I mean, after the origin, he's the performance, and maybe we don't even get a full origin for the Fantastic Four. I kind of hope we don't. So if he spends the vast majority of his time, you know, just buried under the thing as a performance capture performance, then it's not like his star power is going to override everybody else. And I would also just say that Issa Rae is already a pretty big star, and Yahya Abdul-Mateen II is well on his way, and Shameik Moore should be a bigger star, not just for voice acting in Spider-Man of the Spider-Verse, but for live action. And if they are Marvel's first family, all three of them plus Seth Rogen are going to be massive, massive stars.
Yeah.
So who do you have then? Because obviously you have some of my names, but are there any names that you have? Let's start with Reed Richards.
Okay.
So besides the names I threw out there of Yahya, Bill Hader, William Jackson Harper, and Lakeith Stanfield, who do you have on your list for Reed?
So you know actors way better than me. So I had to really narrow it down. So I only have I have a couple backups potentially with some people, but for Reed Richards, it's going to be weird. Cause I really liked all your choices, especially Yahya, even though he's heavily involved in all these DC films or whatever in TV shows.
Well, Watchmen's not coming back. So,
unfortunately,
and how many more times is he going to play Black Manta? Like Aquaman, yeah, Aquaman 2, and then what? I mean, Legion of Doom. Right. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. I mean, he was on the Suicide Squad in Secret Six at some point, I think, or whatever. But no, you're right. You're right. But I like Yahya a lot. I think that's a good solid thing for me. For whatever reason, I kept thinking of this actor, and it just, I don't know. This is weird. It's a little outside the box, maybe. But and again, I went older, just like what you're thinking, because I was thinking of. You've got to establish these people as think of them like a Tony Stark and Robert Downey Jr. from the first Iron Man film. I know the tendency is to cast women, you know, they want to try to cast these younger, you know, whatever actresses, and the older actresses get kind of like cast as like the moms or, you know, older moms or whatever. But for me, it's like, I thought of it like Robert Downey Jr. Like, let's get some, you know, get these characters that are, you know, a little bit closer to middle age than they are to, you know, in their early 20s or 30s or whatever. And so I'm going to go with, this is weird, little out there, Diego Luna. Mm. For whatever reason, he just commands when he's on screen. The dude just, like, he has this presence of him. And I'm like, man, this guy, he commands when he's on screen. And so I just like this idea of Diego Luna being Reed Richards. And you can imagine him trying to explain the ultimate nullifier on screen. You'd believe it.
Yeah.
I think his acting chops and his presence really, I think, kind of do everything you need to do for Reed Richards. And I don't know. The more I thought about it, the more I really liked it. I'm going to toot my own horn on Diego Luna on that one.
I like that choice a lot. That I would be perfectly happy with that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. He's also just got the physique because I think of like Mr. Fantastic as this kind of little bit slender, he's not built, but he just, when I see him, I'm like, man, he's like the perfect build for me when I see him for whatever reason. So yeah, Diego Luna would be, he would be my Mr. Fantastic. Now I'm going to go for Invisible Woman. This was a tough one. Because I'm going again more in like the early 40s, mid 40s range for Invisible Woman, because I want these characters to have an established rapport already when we meet them, kind of like they did in the original Fantastic Four movie, and so the one from Tim Story. So I was thinking, and I had a tough time thinking of this because I'm like, man, trying to think of, you know, who could I cast, and I came up with two names. And the first one was Rose Byrne. I really liked Rose Byrne, and I thought she'd be a great Sue Storm. And she was obviously in X-Men First Class and whatnot, or the X-Men trilogies.
That's all right. Different continuity.
Yeah, exactly. Different continuity.
As far as we know.
And yeah. And she's a great actress. She's been in many different roles, comedy. So she kind of fits that role a little bit. So I liked that a lot. So I was like, okay, this is good. And then I thought, well, who else could I think of besides, you know, an alternative? Because I was like, Rose Byrne might be a little too on the nose, because I wanted to think outside the box. Well, there was one name that came up to mind, and I have to thank you for it, because you kind of got me down the road. Regina King as Invisible Woman.
Like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. And so I was thinking, because I liked your Human Torch, because I'm like, okay, I know this voice actor and her dope is amazing. And I could not think of any other person to play Human Torch. I just could not think of a younger actor that can ensue that. Now, granted, I never would have thought Chris Evans could have done it, who was in Cellular.
Yeah.
When I saw it, I would never have thought of him to be Human Torch. So I think that could be a very a wide range role, but I liked your pick.
Regina King was actually on my list, and I moved her off of it because I felt like I was being too on the nose because I had Yahya as my top choice for Reed.
Yeah.
With Yahya being my top choice, it felt too obvious to put Regina King there on my list for Sue Storm, but she would be amazing in that role. And I would say, without a doubt, like even if Yaya is Reed Richards, Regina King would be a great Invisible Woman.
She'd be fantastic. She in suit, like I mean, I haven't seen her. I know she's in Leftovers, and that's one of the big reasons why she's in Watchmen, because Damon and that whole crew that he brought over loved her in that show, and that was the one thing they wanted to bring over was her, because she was so good. I'm not very familiar with her, and after Watchmen, which is just a mind-blowingly amazing show on multiple levels, and she is a big reason why. She just is phenomenal. She can play the tender, she can play angry, she can do anything. So with Sue Storm, she kind of ranges. She's kind of old. Over the years of the comics, you know, she's been the mother figure, but she's also had to like kind of stick up for herself a little bit, because her voice would get lost. And so, those are angles that you could play with. And I could totally see her saying that and making it known that, like, you know, they need to listen to her. She's got something to say. And I love that idea of Regina King saying that. And as far as
I was surprised you didn't pick, although I'm also happy that you didn't pick her, because, like, I know a lot of fans are throwing out Charlize Theron as Invisible Woman.
Two on the nose.
Well, it's also not the right role for her. Not the best role for her. Best role for her is Abigail Brand from S.W.O.R.D. So if that's the role that I like for Charlize, and so that's kind of the one that I hope. And I know other people have drawn that connection as well. I'm not the only person with Charlize on their fan casting for Abigail Brand, but I do like that role. I do like the idea of Charlize in the MCU, but I also like it if you bring an actor, particularly a big name, into the MCU, that they play something that isn't the role you would automatically expect for them. At least when we're having the fun of fan casting, that's part of it too. I know that some of the choices may not always be the most obvious names, but to me, that's not as much fun, because it's the same idea that pretty much everybody can come up with. So
exactly.
And also the casting choices, when I think back historically of the ones that have been the most exciting for me, sometimes it's when it's exactly who I wanted, like Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther, but other times it is an unexpected choice that just for some reason kind of makes sense. Like Heath Ledger as the Joker being one of the biggest examples ever. I know it's not Marvel, but with The Dark Knight, like when we found out that Heath was going to be the Joker, it's like, I can't really see that. It's not obvious to me what that is, but that's kind of what's great about it. And so not just with Heath, but that was definitely a big moment where it was like, I kind of like the idea of going off script a little bit and pulling somebody from out of left field. But anyway, moving on to, I'm guessing Johnny Storm is going to be the next one you have some suggestions for.
So this was the toughest one. And so for me, I kind of deferred to your choice, because, again, I haven't seen Dope and I need to see it. And I've heard great things about it. And I love the actor as Miles in Into the Spider-Verse.
I want Shameik Moore to have a live action Marvel role. And he's at 25. He's too old to be Miles in the MCU. So what's another character he could play? Human Torch. And when I think of Shameik Moore and Tom Holland, who are similar in age, like I think Shameik Moore is like a year older, when I think of the two of them going up against each other and having that Human Torch Spider-Man rivalry, I think it would be awesome. And there is a meta quality to it. Not that I think they should emphasize that, but that Shameik Moore is Spider-Man somewhere else in the Spider-Verse is kind of cool.
And there is a name you dropped that kind of casually that I was like, oh man, that's perfect. I wish I would have thought of that. I could not believe I missed that. But John Boyega would be a perfect Johnny Storm. Mm-hmm. He'd be so perfect. Oh my gosh, that would be. Can you imagine Regina King and him like going off? Oh my god, that's like, it's printing money right there, man. Like those two together interacting, like, you know, brother sister. Oh man, that is
I mean,
good stuff.
John Boyega would be thrilled with that choice. And the only reason that I give Shameik Moore the nod, it's honestly just because I want to see Shameik Moore be elevated, like in a way that he's not getting the opportunity. Not that John Boyega, I mean, we're not seeing him in a ton of stuff post Star Wars, but I just want to see Shameik Moore get an opportunity on a bigger stage that John Boyega's already had with Star Wars. But either one of them would be outstanding as Johnny.
Yeah. I think that those two are great names. And again, Human Torch is one I think that has a lot more. It's a lot easier to cast, in my opinion. I think there's a lot. I think to play the Human Torch is a lot easier than I think to play Invisible Woman or Mr. Fantastic. So I think that one's just like whatever young up and coming actor that's like has is charismatic you think is charismatic, you could put in that spot, and it could be literally anything and anybody, and it's there. So that one was like a little bit harder, and also it would be the easiest thing to cast.
Yeah, I think that Johnny is the one that maybe has the broadest range of actors who could probably come in and do it well. But I also feel like if you get the right actor and somebody who's just really good, like Shameik Moore and John Boyega are really good. And so, yes, they could do exactly what you would expect from Johnny Storm, but they can also do things that you wouldn't expect. And I do feel like that's what the Fantastic Four movies should do in the MCU, is kind of really add on to some of the characters and add a little more depth and add a little more, a few more unexpected things to their personalities. Not that there aren't moments that are deeper for Johnny Storm in the comic books. I'm sure there are. I mean, I know I've read some, and I'm sure there are more that I haven't seen, but I feel like just as a performer, you want to see them do things that kind of surprise you a little bit. So I still want to see John Boyega or Shameik Moore just like cracking on the thing and making jokes with other characters and giving Reed a hard time and Sue and everything else. Like, I still want, and being the cocky, brash superhero, I totally want to see all of that, but maybe you see a little extra. And it may not necessarily be in the first Fantastic Four movie, but that's another thing I'm looking at here is, you know, I'm looking for the long term of who's going to be playing these characters for the next 10 years. I'm not just looking at this as one movie. And so if you're talking about actors who could really do some exciting and unexpected things with Johnny Storm over time, I think Shameik Moore and John Boyega really fit that description.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's all the credit to you, man, because that was tough. And I could totally see both those people doing that.
Yeah. So what about the ever-loving blue-eyed thing, Ben Grimm? Who do you got?
Oh, man. This was a lot of fun. This to me was because I try to think about who, again, kind of... They have to be closer in age of Diego Luna and Regina King. So I had to think of older people, or a little bit older, I should say. And that was tougher. That was a little bit tougher. I'm like, man, this is, you know, I have two options. One's way younger, though. But I think you could easily still justify it. I think you're going to give me a little bit of a, but just bear with me. But he's my backup. This is kind of a whatever. My first choice that kind of hit me, I was like, oh, man, this is perfect, was both my options, you might kind of give me some like, what? Actually is John Cena. I think he would be a great Ben Grimm because yeah. I think
John Cena is not that young. He's in his 40s.
Well, one person is younger.
Oh,
the next
one
is a lot younger. Sorry. But that's why I thought John Cena would be perfect because he's big. He's in his, you know, again, he's a little bit older. He's a little closer in age with Regina King and Diego Luna.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. John Cena is 43.
Yeah, so he would be, so for me, he would be a great, just kind of a, again, that kind of muscle head. He kind of, that's what he'd be great at playing at. I've seen him play that character, obviously. And I think that he can deliver he can deliver good humor. And I think with the thing, he'd be a perfect person to have to deliver that kind of, you know, comebacks and what have you. So for me, I think John Cena would be a perfect transition from the regular thing to, you know, CGI thing or whatever you want to do with that character. The random, if you wanted to go the more darker brooding thing, which I think that's the kind of the problem with the thing on the film, on all the films. And I think one of the harder things to nail the character is the balancing act. And now when I say balancing act, I want to really emphasize the delicate balancing act of he's depressed because he's a monster, and to where he's like the fun loving, ever loving blue eyed thing. How do you balance that? And it's really, really hard because you have to go from hating what you look like to embracing what you look like, back to I don't really like being the thing because I look like a monster, but I also appreciate it. And that's where the thing, he treads that line, and I think that's what makes the thing so good as a character, and why I love him, is one of my favorite Marvel characters, in my top 10 at least. And I would say that is because he's relatable, because that can be transcended, not just what you look like, but for many things. You accept what you are, but it's hard still dealing with it, regardless if you accept it or not. And to play that you have to be, you have to either write that really well and the actor's got to nail it. But I mean, it really comes down to the actor has to really convey that. And I thought so far, unfortunately, both the writing and the performances of the thing and all the films have not been to what really could connect to, I think, audiences, especially the second Fantastic Four film where they just played it for laughs the whole time. And the things is kind of, again, the butt of jokes, if you will. So John Cena, I don't know if he could do the dark, a little bit darker tone. Maybe he could, but
I mean, I think he's got something because James Gunn has been crediting, and we still don't know like a lot about the Suicide Squad, but James Gunn has been talking up John Cena's performance quite a bit on his social media and talking about how John Cena has been one of the best actors that he's worked with and one of the best improv actors, or maybe the best improv actor that James Gunn has ever worked with. And that's saying a lot. So, and James Gunn tends to be pretty honest about things. Like you don't see him praising a bunch of people and then it turns out, oh, they're really disappointing. So I think that John Cena, and also, I mean, look, wrestling is acting.
Yes.
And not that all of it's great acting, but there's plenty of acting in wrestling. And I think John Cena has been, one of the top, not just a top guy in WWE, but on the microphone all the time, involved in the biggest storylines. And there's certainly a fair amount of improv that goes into professional wrestling as well. So I think that there's a lot of muscles, not just like the physical ones that you see on John Cena, but like just in terms of his acting ability, there's a lot that he's been working on for a very long time. So it wouldn't surprise me that to find out that he's got a lot more that he's a lot more capable as an actor and has a lot more range as an actor than a lot of people would normally expect.
Yeah. And so he would be kind of like my first choice with that age group or whatever. So then my wild card dark horse would be Ray Fisher. I think if you wanted to go kind of more of a darker route with Ben, he could really play that. I know Cyborg is a little bit like that in Justice League, but who knows what's going to happen with that whole franchise and that character, post all the Zack Snyder cut and all that stuff. Regardless, I think Ray Fisher is still a good actor. He was in a little bit of True Detective 3, and I thought he did, the subtlety he did in that was still good. Like I said, I think he'd be a great Ben Grimm to like really convey, because you have a handsome, handsome guy like him turn into the thing. You really could play on that whole monster attitude. That would be a perfect thing for him to play. So, he's kind of like my dark horse, I think, if that was an option or whatever, but he's also a lot younger. So you'd have to cast, I think
he's not that young though. I'm looking at now, he's 32. So, if you have Regina King, 17 years between them, but you would just say that Regina King's Sue Storm is younger than that. Yeah. And so you just have, which she can obviously play. So I think that works. I mean, depending on if you have a cast that is in their 30s and 40s, I think Ray Fisher works within that context. But as far as some of the other roles, so I mentioned Silver Surfer briefly last week, Leslie Odom Jr., best known as Aaron Burr, the original cast of Hamilton. I couldn't help but watching Hamilton on Disney Plus. I mean, I had seen Leslie Odom Jr. in other things and thought he was very talented, but then seeing him in Hamilton and that character of Aaron Burr struggling with his position in that film, and I know it's not all historically accurate. That's not the point. The point is the acting and what I was seeing in the performance. I was like, this guy as kind of the torn and very troubled Herald of Galactus just works for me. And I think it could be something really, really special there. But I also really like Keanu Reeves for the role of Silver Surfer, because Keanu Reeves is awesome. And I don't necessarily think he could play any role in the MCU. Keanu Reeves wouldn't be a bad Reed Richards, though, by the way. But I think he would be better in something that's a little more cosmic and unexpected, like Silver Surfer. Or Adam Warlock has been one of my top choices for Keanu Reeves for a long time, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I don't know. Those are a couple of my top choices. I know a big fan choice out there for Silver Surfer is Rami Malek. I would be happy with that. I don't know that I wouldn't be as excited about that at the mere mention of it as Leslie Odom Jr. or Keanu Reeves. Do you have any top choices for the Surfer?
Not really, to be honest. That one is so, just like with the Rise of Silver Surfer, which I thought he looked great in the movie, to be honest. And he you can get any voice actor to play him. So I don't know if you necessarily need to have a, you know, again, someone even doing motion capture or whatever. Yeah, to be honest, I think that role is also one that I think that's pretty easy to find. You just kind of find someone who's got a good voice and you put them in it. You know, Lawrence Fishburne cast him last time. He sounded great. So, I mean, whatever you think is kind of, that one's kind of a it's whatever for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a role that, well, I would hope that they really get somebody who's strong to do some really interesting things with it, because I feel like, while you could just have him be a side character and cast anybody who's got a good sounding voice to do that, I think what would be more exciting is if you cast somebody with the idea that not only is this someone who shows up in the Fantastic Four and other cosmic adventures, but this is somebody who maybe could have their own film and maybe could have their own or their own Disney Plus series. And so that's where I'm looking at somebody who could really carry that. And I think Leslie Odom Jr. could do that. One role that I did not focus on last week, and it was one that I got asked about, and it's fair to ask about it. What about Dr. Doom? Because this is the biggest villain in the history of Marvel Comics, or at least certainly was pre-Thanos in the MCU. So to have this legendary antagonist who I think most of us expect to not just be a villain for the Fantastic Four, but be somebody that a lot of people in the MCU have to deal with at different points in time in the years to come. Who should play this role? And part of the reason why the main reason I did not include Dr. Doom in my fantasy casting last week is, honestly, I don't have an idea that I absolutely love for Victor Von Doom. The one idea that I absolutely loved was Christian Bale, and he's in Thor Love and Thunder playing who knows. So with Bale off the table, I didn't really have anyone else that I was really locked into for the role. There are some names that get thrown out there. I mean, one name that I've thrown out previously and others have that I do like Oscar Isaac as Victor Von Doom. I think that would be fun. I've seen Christoph Waltz thrown around there. I don't really like him as much for Dr. Doom, even though he would be great. I kind of like him more if Red Skull is brought back. Not to take anything away from Ross Marquand, who played Red Skull in Infinity War and Endgame, but if that character gets brought back, I kind of like the idea of Christoph Waltz playing him. So the other names that are out there, and I'm certainly not the first person to suggest this actor, but he's probably my top choice right now for Dr. Doom. I just don't know if I 100% love it. Not because I don't think he'd be great. I think he would be. I just don't know if it's the most interesting thing he could do in the MCU. And that is Dan Stevens. Dan Stevens, when he signed on to lead Legion on FX, there was a part of me that was, of course, very excited about that for that show, but there was another part of me that thought, man, he probably could have held out for a bigger role in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but Legion is over, so he could still jump into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And Dan Stevens, I think, is still a fairly underrated, underseen talent. I know a lot of people are watching him right now in Eurovision. People know him from Legion. They know him from The Guest about, 6 years ago that movie came out. And when I saw him in that film, Dan Stevens for a long time became my top fan casting choice for whoever would be Batman post Ben Affleck. Now that's Robert Pattinson, so that role's off the table for a while. So I still like the idea of Dan Stevens, and I think he could be a great antagonist. And so the moral complexity and ethical complexities of Victor Von Doom, I think Dan Stevens would do a great job of that. I don't know that it's still not a 100% slam dunk where I think, yes, that's the choice. Just stop right there. I'm definitely open to other suggestions. One more name or a couple more names that I'll throw out would be Matthias Schoenaerts. And I may have butchered that, but he's currently appearing in The Old Guard on Netflix with Charlize. He gives a speech in that movie about, I don't want to spoil the movie, but there is one particular scene that kind of sets up what his character is up to in the movie and some of the things going through the complexity of his own moral decisions, where I thought, there's a bit of Victor Von Doom that I'm seeing here. So that's a name that's maybe not going to show up on a lot of fan casting lists that I like. Last name I'll throw out for Dr. Doom is Ryan Gosling, because obviously I think Ryan Gosling, as a lot of people do, really, really brilliant actor, super charismatic. But I also think that I like unexpected choices. And so for Ryan Gosling, the idea of taking him as handsome as he is and putting his face behind an iron mask, I think works. And I also think that it's kind of against type for him a little bit. Maybe people would expect him to play more of a hero, or even if he's going to be a villain, something that's a little bit flashier. Not that Dr. Doom isn't flashy. I mean, he's a big name villain, but he's not flashy in terms of an over the top personality. And so to take Ryan Gosling, who's done some of the bigger, more over the top personalities, like in Shane Black's The Nice Guys, and to actually have him be a little more subdued, I think he would be really, really great at that. So Ryan Gosling, and I think my top three choices are Dan Stevens, Oscar Isaac, and Ryan Gosling, but there's not a single one of those choices where, as happy as I would be if any of them get cast, I still don't know that I love them quite as much as I love some of my top choices for the other roles we've talked about.
I really liked Ryan Gosling. And I think the weird thing is that it seems almost so obvious that to put a big name like Ryan Gosling into a role like this. But you got to remember that Ryan Gosling is very choosy with his roles. He doesn't just pick things out of just for cash grabs. The dude, he wants to do things he wants to do, and he's developed his name enough to where he can kind of do that. And I respect the hell out of the guy. I mean, I love him as an actor. I every time I see him in something, he's just he always gives it his all. And he very easily could have tried to go down the road of trying to be the next, you know, Brad Pitt, you know, whatever, and try to be in big roles and in big films, and then he doesn't really do that. And he's starting to.
I mean, he's going to be in Wolfman, and now he's got an MCU connection with starring in The Gray Man for the Russo brothers on Netflix, which also features Chris Evans. So, I mean, there are a lot of Marvel influencers who could be sure. Who could get in his ear if he's offered a Marvel role, who could talk him into it if he has any hesitation.
But who's putting out The Wolfman? It's Blumhouse. Blumhouse is an independent movie property. So that's my thing, is like, he's not picking things that is tied to these huge, huge studios. He's doing more creative driven things. And I mean, look at Drive, look at, Blade Runner, 2020. These are things. If he's going to do a science fiction movie, he's doing like the most artistic science fiction movie since the original Blade Runner, pretty much. I mean, there's more, but you know what I'm saying? So he's very, I love Ryan Gosling. He would be an amazing Victor Von Doom.
Well, look, I mean, the Russos have said they want to do Secret Wars. And so if they're talking to Ryan Gosling saying, hey, man, come play Dr. Doom in the MCU and then you can be with us again in Secret Wars, he might be up for it. I mean, I understand that Ryan Gosling is very choosy about his roles, but I think the MCU has built up a fair amount of artistic credibility.
That's true.
Within Hollywood. And I think it's only getting more, and I think it's only going to get more of that just based over time, as more and more people are realizing like that these movies aren't as cookie cutter as their reputation might be. And there's actually a lot of creatively ambitious stuff that's going on in these films. And I only expect that to continue, by the way, as time goes on, for Marvel to be even more creative and even more ambitious, because they have to keep coming up with new stuff that they haven't already done.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that those are great. Dan Stevens, I've only seen him in Legion a little bit, and I feel like he's a great actor. Haven't seen him anything else really. For my Dr. Doom, again, going along the lines of my casting a little bit older, and speaking in the lines of Ryan Gosling, this one definitely is not, I don't think he would ever do this role, but I think he'd be pretty perfect. Javier Bardem, I think, would be an amazing Victor Von Doom, because the thing is with Javier is that there's, again, you have to have flashback scenes. You got to have scenes with Richards and him and going at it. And I think Javier could do it with a mask on. And the dude just, again, obviously No Country for Old Men. He's just cold and calculating. Mm-hmm. And imagine having his voice, just kind of tweaked up a little bit, modulated with, Dr. Doom and a great costume, and just, oh man, I think he'd be amazing as a Dr. Doom. So that would be my choice. But I like Ryan Gosling a lot as that.
As long as
well.
It's No Country for Old Men, Javier Bardem, and not Skyfall, Javier Bardem, I can get on board with that. I do think Javier Bardem is, and that's, I mean, not to take a shot at him, but even though I kind of did, but no, like the point there is like, on. I didn't like Skyfall quite as much as everybody else did. And some of that was leaning, I don't know, that performance was just a little much for me. And I kind of wish it had been dialed back a little bit. But yeah, I mean, Javier Bardem, unquestionably a brilliant actor. And of course, that performance in No Country for Old Men, I think he'd be a great Victor Von Doom. I like that choice a lot. I know another name or another role that people would like to probably hear some suggestions for. I know a lot of you want to hear Galactus. I don't have like a home run choice for Galactus, at least not right now. The only name I threw out, we were just chatting with some folks on the Discord a couple weeks ago, and a name I just kind of threw out at the top of my head was Ron Perlman, who I do actually really like for Galactus, and I think that would be, I think he would be pretty great in that role. So, but I don't, again, it's not like a home run choice for where I think like that's automatically it. That's the guy, but Ron Perlman is the only suggestion I have for Galactus right now. Definitely a role I probably need to spend more time thinking about. I don't know if you have any suggestions for Galactus, Paul, but I do have, I have key choices for Mole Man.
Galactus, that one, again, I feel like Silver Surfer is kind of the same thing. You just put a deep voice under that guy and you're good to go.
I don't know, because Galactus has to give, Galactus is going to have to give these big speeches that kind of justify what he is as a force of nature in the universe, like as a necessary force of nature, because you can't just have somebody who comes in and is the big bad with Galactus, because then it's basically another Thanos. What differentiates Thanos from Galactus is the idea that while Thanos sees himself and his role as being necessary in the universe, what's different about Galactus is Galactus isn't the only one who sees himself as necessary in the universe. And that's part of, that's something that is, you know, that was a process of discovery within Marvel Comics, is to kind of redefine or recontextualize that character as not really being about the good or the evil, but just being about a force of nature in a way that, you know, a tornado or an earthquake, they're not good or evil. They are just forces of nature. They are just things that happen. And Galactus is kind of a thing that happens. And I think that for Galactus to be able to kind of define himself in that way, you need an actor who can actually do it. And so I think Ron Perlman is a very good actor, and I think he could probably do that. But I'm sure there are other choices. But I don't think Galactus is just a super easy role to cast, though. I do think that you have to have there's a lot more complexity there than you might initially think.
I think for me, it's deep voice, Allstate guy. And I'm not even trying to be funny. I'm being
Dennis
serious.
Haysbert?
Yeah, he'd be perfect for Galactus.
No,
he'd be perfect.
He could be. I do like that choice. That one works.
That would be a perfect voice.
But good. I don't like any of our Galactus choices as much as I like my Mole Man choices. So,
all right, go for it. I know you've been itching at the bit for this one.
Look, Mole Man exists in the real world, and not really, but the perfect choice, and I know he's older at 68 years old. I don't care. He's perfect, and I don't necessarily need Mole Man to be in multiple movies, but he could still do it if Mole Man is the antagonist in the first Fantastic Four movie, and that's Steven Root, a.k.a. Milton Wadhams from Office Space, or maybe you've seen him on most recently with Bill Hader on Barry. Steven Root would be like the quintessential Mole Man. It's almost too perfect. That's the only thing that makes me not like it, is he's too perfect to be as Mole Man, but I don't care. It's so perfect that it's undeniable. And I think Steven Root should be the guy as Mole Man. But if you want somebody a little bit younger, if you want somebody maybe a little more contemporary as far as who's in a lot more movies right now, then I think another great choice would be Paul Walter Hauser. He would be really, really awesome as Mole Man in the MCU, and I would be happy enough to accept him instead of in lieu of Steven Root. But Steven Root is easily my top choice.
You know, Mole Man is just, I can't think of one. I actually like your choices, to be honest. Mole Man, that I don't know if you need to make him short, you know, make him super short or anything either. I think you could just make him like you were saying, just kind of a very homely kind of, you know, person or whatever, and just make him kind of hunch, if you will. So yeah, I don't know. I think that could be done by many different people, to be honest. And again, another role, I think it just needs a real cartoony person, because that's what Mole Man is. He's very much a cartoon character. He's so over the top, and you need him because he's a ruler. He's an insane ruler of the underground. So he has to be, you know, again, you have to have someone who can, you know, play an over the top person, because that's what he is. He's commanding these subhumans, the subterranean, whatever their names are. And all these giant monsters. So you need whoever it would be. They'd have to be very, very, a very animated person. They'd be able to pull that off. So, I can't think of anyone at this moment at the top of my head, because I didn't think about Mole Man, to be honest. So that's a tough one. That one, a good character actor that I can't think of right now, you would just put there. But I don't know. But yeah, I would say someone who's able to be that over-the-top personality, because that's what you need to be Mole Man.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Steven Root can totally do that. And then Paul Walter Hauser, I think, would be a great choice. And you might, if you're only familiar with the name and can't quite picture him, he was in Richard Jewell, the Clint Eastwood film last year, I, Tonya, Black Klansman. He also just appeared recently in Spike Lee's new film, The Five Bloods, on Netflix. Speaking of Black Klansman, though, just to circle back to Reed Richards before we wrap up here, I think for another great choice for Reed is, this is not, and I can't really claim this one because, well, I think it's been part of a rumor from a site that's not very reliable, but also I think the rumor was just really driven by the point that he's been a popular fan casting choice, particularly over the past year or so, and that is John David Washington, who is going to appear in Tenet whenever that comes out, but also starred in Black Klansman. I think John David Washington is a really awesome actor, and I think he would also be another great potential choice for Reed Richards, so I would be perfectly happy with him being in that role. Also, by the way, though, John David Washington and Yahya Abdul-Mateen, I think I would probably have to have each of them on my list potentially for the role of Dr. Doom, only because if you see Reed Richards and Victor Von Doom as almost reflections of each other, which I don't always totally agree with, but if you go along with that in some ways, I think that John David Washington and Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, on either side of that, Reed versus Victor Von Doom, I think they could both potentially be really, really good at that. So, because I think they're both good enough actors to be great as Reed Richards or Victor Von Doom. But I think the biggest point in all of this, though, is that I think there are a lot of great choices for these roles. It just kind of depends on what Marvel Studios wants to do, what the director wants to do. And of course, we haven't really talked about director choices. Dee Reese remains my top pick to direct Fantastic Four. I really think that she's just she's already a brilliant filmmaker, but it's just a brilliant superhero movie waiting to be made, is whichever one Dee Reese is hired to make. And I would love for that movie to be Fantastic Four, particularly if it involves any of the actors that we've discussed here today.
Yeah, totally. This is the directors is one that I wasn't prepared for. I need to have to do a little more research on that one. But I kind of liked, was it Peyton Reed you were saying before, that there was he was potentially, or I'm thinking of something else or a different director.
Yeah, like, I mean, Peyton Reed would have been a thought if there wasn't going to be a third Ant-Man, but there is. So I think Peyton Reed is off the table. And I mean, he was in the running way back when Tim Story got the job to direct first Fantastic Four movie. That's where the whole idea of a period piece 1960s Fantastic Four film, which isn't really my favorite choice for that, but that's where a lot of that comes from, is Peyton Reed, because that was his take before Fox ultimately decided on what they did with Tim Story's Fantastic Four. But I think there are, I mean,
Rick Famuyiwa, that's who I'd want.
I love Rick Famuyiwa as a choice for Fantastic Four. He would definitely be on my short list in addition to Dee Reese. I think they would both be fantastic, no pun intended, choices to direct that film. We should be so lucky as MCU fans to have either one of them directing the Fantastic Four feature film whenever we get that in the MCU. Now we have a bit more Marvel news that we're going to be talking about over on the Patreon for our Patreon credit scene. So at patreon.com/SeanGerber, SEANGERBER, that is where you can find exclusive MCU fan show content, exclusive podcasts, including Patreon credit scenes where we discuss either an extension of what we were talking about in the main episode, or maybe it's a completely different topic. In this case, it's going to be a completely different topic. We're going to be talking about the first trailer for Hellstrom, the Marvel series coming to Hulu that doesn't have the branding of a Marvel series. So we're going to dig into that over on the Patreon, where we have other exclusive podcasts like the Marvel Unlimited Book Club, where we talk comics. Most recently, we were talking about Riri Williams, aka Ironheart. We also have Marvelous Moments, which are scene breakdowns from the MCU, a daily news show that runs Monday through Friday. And we also have an exclusive Discord community where we have office hour sessions where we just chat and talk about Marvel or whatever we feel like talking about. And I also host watch parties over on the Patreon exclusive Discord community. And if you do sign up and you are getting exclusive audio, you can get your own private RSS link that you can put into a podcatcher like Apple Podcasts, so you can subscribe and get the MCU Fan Show, the main podcast, as well as all the Patreon exclusives, all in one feed. You don't have to track them down in multiple places. And all of that is available at patreon.com/SeanGerber, SEANGERBER. And speaking of our Patreon, I want to thank Josh D, Jeff, Ryan W, Chuck G, and Bill L. Thank you so much for being a part of our Patreon. Hopefully you're enjoying all of the exclusives. And if you want to hear some of those exclusive podcasts or be a part of our Discord community, again, the address is patreon.com/SeanGerber. Also, please make sure you are following us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. At all of those places, we are at MCU Fan Show. If you want to follow Paul on Twitter, you can do that at Herman22 with two N's. If you would like to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, you can do that at Mr. Sean Gerber, Sean spelled S-E-A-N. So for Paul, I'm Sean. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.